Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sedgnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Ruth Clark. Ruth, you just read a piece called Witness for us, and now that's become the beginning of your novel in progress. Can you tell us how that came about?
Yes. My husband, when he read it, he said, I enjoyed it, but it felt like the beginning of something larger. And when I went to Nicaragua last winter, I arrived in early December, which is the time of Purísima, which is the blessing of the Virgin of her purity. And the Spaniards brought it over, and what it has grown into the greatest fireworks month. And it was blasting me out of bed. I met a businessman who said, it reminds me of the 80s, like we're being bombed. And
oh, good heavens.
I never got used to it. And one night, I think it was around New Year's Eve, I just sat bolt upright and said, this would be a perfect time for a crime. And it's gone on from there.
I guess it would, because you wouldn't be able to tell one bang from another.
No, absolutely not.
So that's the title of your new book?
Mm-hmm, it is.
A Perfect Time for a Crime. Tell us a little about that novel.
Okay, well, the body is a woman's body, and I'll be reading from that portion. She was knocked over by a man, her husband, who escaped. He stuffed her in the well. He escaped and went up to join his buddy in Nicaragua. He's a Costa Rican. His buddy's a Nicaraguan. And they are into very unique drug dealing. Nothing is ever done in the same way twice, so there are no patterns. The parrot, actually, was a mule for cocaine. The man who knocked his wife over and she... He didn't really kill her. It's a reflexive verb. The table killed her. He starts going to church and lighting candles and praying, and he turns around. And in Nicaragua, he meets a woman. They bump into each other in the church, and he sees later that she has scars on her and subsequently learns that she has been abused by her husband. She's a bubbly character and wants some... He's made so much money drug dealing now that he buys her a hacienda so she can have a shelter for abused women. Hmm. So this is his sort of dealing with his guilt and a good way to spend some money.
Yeah. So what turned out as a beginning of what looked like a murder mystery then became a bit of a thriller, and now we're into mainstream fiction. You've got it all in there. Will you read us a further section from...
I will.
Perfect Time for a Crime?
I will. I haven't introduced any of the other characters, and I think I'll just stay with Simon Patrick. I was wrong. I could kick myself for not having pushed myself to learn more Spanish. When Maria arrived a couple of days later, she'd brought a copy of La Nación, the major daily newspaper out of San Jose. She pointed to the article. Una mujer muy delgada, como una niña. Like a child, como una niña. The discovery that it had been a woman stuffed into the well, not a child, did not diminish the brutality of the crime that had been committed. But a crime against a woman, however horrific, could have had some crazed rational or irrational reasoning behind it. It could have been a crime of passion, of vengeance, or jealousy. But to kill a child is pure, and there's no justification for it. However, I was only somewhat relieved. I poured Maria a mug of coffee and offered her a chair at the dining room table where we spread the newspaper, and I made notes in the margins, sorting out the story from Maria's translation. There would be an autopsy, but in addition to the woman's body being stuffed in the well, the journalist reported that a massive contusion on the back of the victim's head had been discovered, which made it debatable whether drowning was the cause of death. Detectives and their lackeys arrived to scour the property, the shoreline, the orchard, barn, shed, and of course the house. In the shed on a workbench under the broken pottery, they discovered a needle and a spool of thread and a skein of lightweight Velcro-like ribbon. In a drawer I hadn't bothered to open, they found empty tiny Ziploc bags like a jeweler might use to store rings or chains he'd repaired. In the bedroom under a loose tile on the floor, they discovered sketches of patterns for harness, ironically using a child's notebook on which the cover was a parrot. I started to buy La Nacion to see if I could learn more Spanish and keep an eye on the reportage of the murder, if that's what it was. I listened intently to the parrot that told me his name was Don Verde. He seemed to speak in three separate, distinct voices. A woman who sounded as if she was being abused, whimpering like a child. There was the voice of a man telling someone to cállate, be quiet, shut up. The third voice was another man giving instructions, cautions, and blessings for the trip. And I didn't need to look up what mucho dinero meant. The detectives hadn't paid much attention to the parrot, but after they'd bagged all they could find that was of interest, they came out to see what I was doing, and that's when they heard the bird. I explained my notions about his voices, and they sat down. I offered them some coffee, and when everyone appeared relaxed and quiet around the table, Don Verde started in on his litany. Notebooks came out. A tape recorder was turned on, and they stayed for at least an hour, listening to Don Verde. They suggested taking him as a witness, but as soon as the chief detective had uttered the words, Don Verde streaked into the trees and remained silent until after they'd left. After the autopsy and investigation that led nowhere, I received the okay to have the well pumped, disinfected, and put back in working order. If only for emergencies, it was good to know that there was a backup supply should something happen with the municipal water line. Meanwhile, life continued. I resumed painting, I pruned trees and cultivated a garden of tomatoes, onions, basil, and cilantro, all staples in my kitchen. Don Verde was still a regular on the pump handle, but he never came inside. I carried his cage out onto the veranda and would put a flowering plant in it if he didn't want to use it anymore. Why would he if he was free to roam and roost wherever he wanted? I imagined that the previous owners had kept his wings clipped, but then remembered the harness and his previous career. How far would he have flown? How did he know the route? I knew parrots were smart, could differentiate colors, textures, and numbers, but I'd never heard of them working as couriers.
Yeah, neither have I. What an intriguing way to do it, too. Well, I eagerly await the book. When do you think it will be done?
Oh, I don't know. I had a major, major breakdown on my computer, so I'm... The thing about losing something that you've written from your heart or your head isn't at all like data.
Right.
Because it's coming back to me, things that I've missed, I'm hearing them again in my head. So it isn't like numbers and columns of things that have just crashed and you've lost them. They're there somewhere. Yeah. I just have to dig them out again.
Well, thanks very much for coming in today and
thank you,
for reading to us. It was delightful. And I wanted to tell our listeners, too, a little about Spirit of the Hills. This radio program is run by members of the writers section of Spirit of the Hills, which is an arts organization for all of Northumberland, for all different kinds of artists, for visual artists, photographers, potters, sculptors, and, of course, writers. And not all the people that you have heard from in previous programs are member of the Spirit of the Hills, but many are. If you are interested in finding out more about Spirit of the Hills, please go to their website at spiritofthehills.org. And if you'd like to write to us at the program, to give us comments, queries, suggestions of who we might interview in future programs, please write to wordonthehills@gmail.com. And thanks for tuning in again today. We hope you'll join us next week.